Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now Blog Talk Radio Show, brought to you by the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. My name is Charlie Stecker and I'll be your host tonight. I'm looking forward to a wonderful show, looking forward to building up our list of people who are going to be coming in and helping me here. You see Tammy's in, all right. Anyway, tonight is open mic night, folks. It's open mic night, and tonight's topics are the NASCA current articles. If you don't know where the NASCA news articles are, go to our website on NASCA, NASCA.org, and look down on News of the Week for tonight. And you click on that, and I'll take you to a whole bunch of the different news topics. And come on, join our panel, and bring one up that you want to talk about tonight. But before we begin the show, I wanted to let you know a little bit about NASCA. We are an all-volunteer organization with a simple purpose: to address issues of child abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so from these chief perspectives. The first is educating the public, especially as related to getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, presenting the facts that show child abuse to be a pandemic, worldwide problem that affects everyone. Yep, everyone, including you if you don't realize it. And the second way is offering hope for healing through numerous paths, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse, and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. We seek to build a survivor/activist community, believing that together we can do what we cannot do alone. Join Bill Murray, Carol D. Levine, Tammy Schalstall, Terry Lanahan, Deborah Hunt, me, Charlie Stecker, and the other NASCA family members, as we invite you to help us discuss the child abuse-related news of the week from the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. Every day, we carry new articles based on current events. To make things easy, we collect them all together for this, our weekly show, where community call-in and participation is always welcome. And for those of you who don't know our call-in number, it is 46-595-2118. And without further ado, I'm going to go ahead and bring in my awesome co-host, Tammy Schalstall out of Florida. Good evening, Tammy.
Hi, Charlie. How are you?
I am doing well. How about yourself?
Oh, not bad. I can't complain too much. I'm calling in from Pompano Beach, Florida. A little tired tonight, but I'm okay. I'm here.
You and me both. I understand that. I'm expelling my last bit of energy, then right off to the bed when the show is over. But in the meantime, welcome, and I'm looking forward to an awesome show. Let's bring in, it is open mic night, so when I open your mic, folks, you're going to stay live. If there is any background noise going on behind you tonight, please be courteous to our listeners and our other panelists and mute your mic while, well, mute your phone while that's on. But next we have an area code 646. Not sure who this is, but we're going to find out in a moment. Area code,
Lisa.
Lisa from New York. Now I know who it is. Hi, Lisa.
Hey, Charlie, what's up? How are you tonight?
Oh, if I was any better, it'd have to be you.
Hanging in.
There you go. Well, welcome. It is open mic night, Charles. I open your mics. We're going to keep you on live. Next, we have a caller from Georgia. Let's see what we have here. Hello, caller from 912. Who do we have the pleasure of having on our panel tonight?
Hello, this is Charlotte. How is everybody tonight?
Oh,
hey,
this is Charlotte. We are doing amazing. It's wonderful to have you. Thank you so much for your dedication and showing up on these many shows. I truly appreciate it, Miss Charlotte.
Well, thank you. Good to talk to you.
Likewise. Well, we're looking forward to a wonderful show and a lot of interaction from our panelists this evening. And right now, our last but not least panelist at the moment is Bobby out of Florida. Hey, Bobby, you're live on air. How you doing, brother?
Hi, Charlie. Doing okay. Thank you.
Well, welcome. We got all our mics open. We got all our current panelists introduced. Again, I'll repeat, if you want to call in to be a member of our panel, please do at 646-595-2118. We look forward to having you join our panel. In the meantime, let's see. Does anybody in our panel have an article that's jumping out at them that needs to be talked about right away for us? Well, then, let's pull something up.
Well, this is Tammy. I've pulled up one that I looked at when I was flipping through them. It's on the NASCA site on the in the list of articles that we have. It's about halfway down. It's an opinion piece, and it's out of Nebraska. And the title of the article says, "School Boards Should Examine Their Child Abuse Reporting Policies." Excuse me. Elementary school is charged with failing to report the suspicious behavior of a teacher charged with multiple counts of sexual assault of a child. Nelson's attorney says in court documents that Nelson did properly report the matter. The article goes on to say safety and security should be as high priority for schools as providing education. School employees and administrators have all important obligation to report allegations of child abuse to proper authorities. This requirement isn't merely common sense, it's a mandate specifically set forth in Nebraska state law. If school employees are of whatever level witness or suspect alleged abuse, they must report it. So they're mandate reporter. The reporting policies in place at Omaha area school districts are considerably. However, the World Herald Joe Nagita found some districts hone in closely to the word of the state law. Others only do partially. So this article, there's more that we can discuss in it. That'll get us started. But, you know, we have mandated reporters. And I was in Omaha probably about a year ago. February was a year. It's a nice little area. They definitely need to report this just like any other area. So mandated reporters need to step up to the plate. Y'all's thoughts?
Well, I agree with what you're saying, and I agree with the content of the article that mandated reporters need to step up to the plate. And apparently, one of the things I'm rereading it just to make sure I'm getting it correctly, it appears that they're even saying that there's confusion there is if somebody thinks, well, I've reported because I've told my supervisor or I told somebody at the school district. Human Resources said, Douglas, well, that doesn't meet the statute. And that's wonderful because in so many cases, how many have we heard after the fact that, well, I did this part, I reported, but they didn't do any further, they didn't follow up. I just think case after case. The one that jumps out first to me is Penn State, you know, where certain personnel reported it and they didn't do anything further. I like that this statute says that's not enough. You have to do more. I think that's wonderful.
Right, but this article also says above that although state laws as an employee to cause a report to be made, the law does not define how that should be done, nor that does it mention telling a school principal is enough. So, yes, they are mandated reporters. This guy, you know, I guess he's contending that they told me I had to be a mandated reporter, but they didn't tell me how to report. So maybe Omaha, Nebraska needs to be a little more specific on, you know, in their laws in mandating mandate reporting.
Understood.
So let me get this straight. They told them he had to wear pants to work, but they didn't tell him how to put damn pants on. That's the stupidest thing I ever heard in my life, that somebody would say that. And the fact that you have to mandate the reporting, which means people are too lazy and too stupid and too irresponsible, so that common sense has to be mandated, and then they don't engage it anyway. It's just, it's on and on and on. And by the way, we have twice as much Southern charm on this show as we usually have, by the way. Now I have a Georgia accent in each ear, so that's pretty cool.
Hear, hear.
Well, anybody else want to talk about this article? Bobby, you have any insight on it? Charlotte?
Well, I read over the fast earlier, but I didn't. That's a comment on it. Mandatory reporting we've been doing for, we've been talking about it for several years now. And, there's law cases against people who don't report, and in school systems and in many systems. And, you know, not really the law of the land.
Bobby, well, thank you for your input on that. How about you, Miss Charlotte? Anything from you on this article, or you just want to remain silent on this one for right now? All right. Well, anybody else want to bring something else from this article, or is there another article that's grabbing somebody's attention out there we want to move on to?
Well, I mean, I'll just say another comment. This is Tammy. You know, for anyone who's listening who doesn't understand exactly what a mandated reporter is, you know, anyone who suspects child abuse is going on, whether it's sexual abuse, physical abuse, or neglect, if they're in the school system, if they're in the hospital, if they're a police or, a public official, by law, they have to say it. You know, you would think that anyone would be a mandated reporter. We've got a lot of background noise,
Yeah, I'm hearing that.
Okay. Okay, Bobby, I cut your mic, so I don't want to keep you where you can't respond. So self-mute yourself, and then we'll open your mic back up, because we want to be able to participate. But you would think that, you know, any of us should be mandated reporter, whether it's a neighbor, or, you know, a brother or sister, a mother or father. You know, to me, you know, all of us should be mandated reporter. The way I feel about it is, if somebody, you know, looks the other way and it's discovered, then they need to be charged. I mean, you know, I think it's how can anybody? I mean, we hold these people accountable, and I got it, as we should. But I still truly believe that, you know, it should be a crime for anyone to turn a blind eye to child abuse. It's inexcusable, and it's kind of like watching somebody being murdered and not reporting it. I mean, how can you get away with that? So that's my
opinion. And I agree with you, Tammy, and add on to that, those who report but then don't do any follow-up and say, well, I did my part, I'm done. You know, if you report it and you don't see something happening from your report, follow that report up. Go to someone above the person you reported to until something actually happens. Don't get that one from you because you reported and that's the end of it. So, Bobby, we're all going to bring you on occasionally, buddy. We'll pick up a lot of background noise from your phone there. I don't know if you have your headset on or whatnot, but do know that we will occasionally, we're not ignoring you. We will occasionally bring you in, but we do need to get that background noise out of the way. Well, folks, we have had a fairly good response to this article. Is there another one that's grabbing anyone's attention?
Go ahead, Lisa.
One more comment about mandated reporting, and I've said this on the show before. People say, oh, yeah, teachers or whoever is a mandated reporter, they know something and they don't report, Well, it's like if a tree falls in the woods, does it make a noise? So if they know something and they don't report, even though they're a mandated reporter, who's going to know that they didn't report it? So it just doesn't work. It doesn't work.
Let's talk about what would work then. If that doesn't work, what will be the solution?
Well, listen, Charlie, you know, I come from a management background, and I always say don't complain about something if you don't have a solution or two in your back pocket. And this is a tough one because I don't have a solution. I don't have another answer. But, you know, saying to people you're a mandated reporter and there are going to be consequences if you don't report, and they don't report, there's no consequences because they didn't report and nobody knows that they knew had something to report. So it just doesn't work. And people just don't want to get involved, you know?
Right, but this article, your point has merit, but this, it really does, Lisa. But this article is an example where it did come out and this guy was called on the carpet for not reporting. I mean, I scrolled away from the article, but I believe it said charges were filed against him.
Good.
So, that's, to me, you know, they need to, Omaha, Nebraska needs to refine their laws a little bit, but, you know, with your point having lots of merit, this is, you know, in one case where, you know, somebody else must have, you know, reported or the kid came forward, but somehow, you know, they did have enough on this guy to press charges to say you should have said more. Well, I reported it to my HR person. Well, you know, who's to say who do they report it to? You know, they pick up the phone and call 911, and then once it's reported, what are they going to do about it? So there's a lot of questions unanswered. I got it.
No, I mean, I'm glad they got the guy and strung him up, but he's one in a billion. So
I read back through the article. I'm seeing what it says. So the current case involving a school there where personnel shows the importance of understanding and following state law. Eric Nelson, the principal of the elementary school, was charged with failing to report the suspicious behavior of Gregory Sedlacek, a teacher charged with sexually assaulting six students. Nelson's attorney says in court documents that Nelson did properly report the matter. So they haven't really come out with a determination on what's going to happen to that principal. And, I agree with Lisa, what she said a little while ago. It's sad that we have to say you're a mandated reporter. I mean, any adult, and I say this and I say it over and over again, all adults are responsible for child abuse intervention and prevention. They shouldn't have to be told to report it. You shouldn't have to be told to follow up on it. But we live in a society where people have to have their hands held, and then if I got to hold your hand, then I'm going to smack your hand when you don't do what's right. So.
But, Charlie, imagine one of us seeing something and not saying something. But the point is that if we didn't and we said, oh, we don't have to report it because we're not mandated reporters. I mean, you could have idiotic conversation on top of idiotic conversation on this subject in this article. And it's you can't legislate this sort of criminal irresponsibility. So, I mean, I love the fact that the guy got caught, but, you know, we got a long, long, long couple of stratospheres to go on that one because it's the kind of thing, it's the failure to report is as invisible as the abuse itself. So, you know, how do you identify it? So,
one of the best ways to do anything is to start doing it, and at least they're starting. You know, there may be a long way to go, but there would be an even longer way to go if it wasn't started at all. So at least it's begun.
Charlie, before we go on, I'd like to mention that someone has called in. It looks like it's a 1111 number, so I guess they're calling in on a computer or something. So we might want to see who that is.
Yeah, let's go greet our Skype or internet call-in. Hello, we're not certain who you are, but you're either calling in on Skype or one of the internet lines. Who do we have tonight? Hello, is someone with us from Skype? I mean, it's usually one or two callers, but.
Okay, well, they dropped
anyway.
Off, so. Bobby,
okay,
I would like to encourage you, before we go on, Bobby, I'd like to encourage you to self-mute yourself because I checked a couple times and we still had the background noise. I want you to be able to participate, and I know Charlie does too, but we've got a lot of background noise. Self-mute yourself and then come on when you want to talk. There you go. Oh, nope, somebody killed him.
Well, hey,
okay.
Oh,
we won't. Well, you know what I mean. Killed his mic. Okay.
Okay. Hello, hello. Our internet caller called back in. Hello, internet caller. Who do we have there tonight?
Hello.
Hello, hello. Who do we have here this evening?
Oh, hi. This is Katarina calling. I called like maybe a week ago, and I was part of another show, and I just wanted to see what it's like to be part of this one. So I'm calling back.
Well, welcome, Katarina. Where are you calling us from?
From Canada, Calgary.
Oh, wonderful. Welcome. Welcome from Canada. Wonderful. It's great to have our neighbors from the north join us this evening. Thank you so much. Well, just to give you a heads up, Katarina, tonight is news article show. Okay, so if you go on the NASCA website, NASCA.org, and you click on the news articles of the day for today, March 18th, you'll see a list of articles. And we ask our panelists, and you're now a member of it, to pick an article that strikes them, and then we all conjure up a discussion between each other over it as fellow panelists. So you're welcome to do that, or you're welcome just to listen as we go along and pull articles up and interact with us. It is an open mic night, so your mic is open, and we can just talk as we go, okay?
Wonderful, yeah. It's a pleasure to be here, so yeah.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you here, and I'm a member of one of your great organizations in Canada, Protecting Canadian Children. I'm one of the inaugural founding members up there, so it's a wonderful organization.
Oh, that's wonderful, and we definitely need that, so yeah.
All right, well, how about we get back to the articles, and Bobby, if you're listening to us, as we said several times, and just bear repeating one more time for our fellow panelists, thank you for your patience with this. Bobby, we are getting a lot of background noise from your mic. We want to have you live on air, so if you mute yourself, we'll attempt here and there to open your mic and see if that noise is going. In the meantime, let's get back to the articles. How about, has any article grabbed someone you want to talk about?
Well, I have an article, and I don't know if I want to talk about it because I don't really – I stared at it, and I couldn't really make heads or – obviously, I understood what the article was about, but I thought, wow, I want to throw this article in the ring and the show and see what other people say because I didn't know where to start with it. And it's the article that talks about taking the Michael Jackson artifacts out of this museum and – you know, I scratched my head when I read that, so I want to throw it out and see what other people have to say. Maybe I can get a starting point for an opinion from somebody else.
Well, I had seen that article, and I saw that it left several other things, and as I'm going back to try to locate it, but I did see it as I was scrolling through them before the show. And I see if you're going to take something out, take all of it out. You know, why have anything representing, you know, representing what we now, what we're filing, we've, most of us have surmised and kind of somewhat understood. Here we are, Indianapolis Children's Museum removes Michael Jackson's hat and gloves, but we'll keep some photos. The world's largest children's museum is removing three Michael Jackson artifacts from its display, but it's keeping photos of the King of Pop in an exhibit honoring a young AIDS patient. The Children's Museum of Indianapolis says it is removing Jackson's fedora and white gloves, which it obtained in an auction from its American Pop exhibit, and is also pulling a signed poster from the Power of Children exhibit. We'll never listen to Michael Jackson's music the same. We're very sensitive to our audience, the director said, in excessive caution in response to the controversy over the HBO film called Leaving Neverland, which directly involved allegations of abuse against children. We removed these objects while we carefully consider the situation more fully. So it doesn't sound like they were permanently removed. It sounds like they were just removed while they reduced or what they may or may not want to do. It was not really immediately clear if the artifacts can be put back on display. That's a review. So.
Yeah, but from what, if you read on there, and I agree with you on that, but some of the stuff they left in, the Ryan White exhibit, the museum kept photos of Jackson that are part of the recreation of Ryan White's bedroom. The Kokomo, Indiana boy became the cause of the celeb in the 80s after contracting HIV through a blood treatment. And that was at a time where AIDS was poorly understood, and Jackson befriended the boy. So I guess they took out a lot of his stuff, the glove and some of the other stuff, but they made the choice to leave the stuff from Ryan White in there. More so from what I'm reading, more so for Ryan White and his calls for treating, you know, for AIDS. Rather than Michael Jackson himself. That's what I'm reading. Your thoughts?
No, I agree with you. I'm reading further down, too. It's just a rather long article. I don't want to read it all on the air with all of the people intervening. But, yeah, I can see that, and there would be have to be a correlation there. Does Michael Olson's story really warrant having to have a Michael Jackson reference to it? I mean, his story in and of itself has power, you know?
Right. Well, one thing we've got to remember about perpetrators and pedophiles, I mean, sometimes they're just bad through and through. None of them are green-eyed monsters with four eyes and ogres. They don't look like ogres. They look like normal people. But most of the time, a lot of the time, I would say that, you know, they're normal people with good and bad and, you know, things that they do that are good. You know, you got the coach, your little league coach who gets out there and he spends time with the kids and he teaches them and he takes them under their wings and, you know, he gives them, you know, he does all the good things that he does. And then, then when people's back are turned, you know, he's molesting them in the locker room. So we've got to remember that, you know, that a lot of times perpetrators are filled with good deeds and bad deeds. Doesn't mean that that one washes the other. Good deeds are good deeds, but you know it's you know what good is it if in fact they're you know what good is the baseball coach if he's you know molesting the boys? But you know there's still good deeds involved, and we've got to remember that you know. And I'm not taking up for him, but I'm just saying that you know a lot of people think of pedophiles and perpetrators as three-eyed monster ogres, and they're not. They're people, so. There you go.
Well, I guess I have a question about it, and it may seem like a stupid question, but what are they trying to gain by removing these artifacts? I mean, the fact is they belong to Michael Jackson. He was, you know, he was a superstar. That much is true. So I don't know, like, I mean, there's friggin' Nazi museums, for Christ's sake, and they don't take that stuff down. And, you know, I think, can anybody explain what they're trying to accomplish by taking this stuff down? I think that's the question I'm asking here, because I don't know.
Okay, I'm gonna give you my perspective on it. I don't know this because I'm not there. I'm not the museum. I can't think in their heads. My perspective would be, if I owned something like that and I had something I was displaying, it seemed supportive of that person or that persona. So I would want to remove that so not to show support for that person or that persona. And in this case, with what has been further exposed on top of what we've already been heard in the past, I believe that may, and again, I can only tell you from my perspective. I'm not in these heads of these people there. I know I removed things from my websites and my Facebook pages because I didn't want to infer that I was promoting or supporting that particular individual or cause.
You make a good point. And then I'm going to really ask you another question because you use an interesting word there, the word support. So are they actually supporting him as a whole? Are they supporting him by displaying these items or just saying, these are his gloves, he was famous, and this is a museum? and I'm not trying to be sarcastic. I'm just saying, are they really supporting him, or are they just showing these items? I mean, do you get what I'm asking?
Well, let's see. The way to find out the real answer to your questions is we'll get you the phone number for the museum, and we'll get you the call number. I don't know what you're asking somebody questions that we can, all the panel, none of us on the panel know why I gave you a possible reference Okay, so if I guess the further answer to what your question is, you probably have to talk to them directly and find out.
You know what?
Unless someone else wants to chime in.
You shouldn't make any suggestions like that, because I'll probably do just that. And really, the reason I'm asking is I looked at this thing and I scratched my head, and so I'm trying to get a perspective, and that's why I'm asking, you know, and yours is a good one, of course. And I just may call them up myself and say, hey, what are you doing? You know, not in a judgmental way, just what's the point? You know, and if he's such a pedophile and such a black mark on history, then I would ask, well, you know, don't they have, like, serial killer museums? I mean...
And we know when we go to a serial killer museum, we're anticipating seeing those things there. When you're going to a children's museum and you have someone who's been accused, who played off people for that, who now is being exposed even further, that's a whole different world. You expect to see that kind of thing if you're going to a, you know, serial killer museum. You don't expect to go to a children's museum and be, so should we plaster, I'll be the devil's advocate, Lisa. Should we allow all kinds of sexual predators, pictures and different paraphernalia from all over Hollywood be plastered all over this children's museum? And if we did, what would we be showing? Support for them, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Promoting them.
Okay, no. Okay, I mean, that's why I'm just questioning the word support here rather than display. So, okay, that answers the question a lot clearer, and I thank you for that. Seriously, I would ask, because I'm in the mood to ask a million questions tonight, and your point is well taken, but I wonder if a child would go there and sense or ask his parents, oh, you know, why are these things here if Michael Jackson was a pedophile? I wonder if parents actually...
Well, I hear what you're saying. I do want to get interaction with some of our other panelists, and I want to say I don't know that a child, per se, a young child's going to even know what a pedophile is at this point. Sadly, they shouldn't have to know, but we live in a society where we have to tell even the youngest of children. But, you know, we can dissect this thing in so many different directions. At the end of the day, this museum, which is the largest children's museum in the nation, made a decision at some level of administration to at least take these items out and review their policy on it. And that, to me, is a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. No, I agree. I just wanted to ask.
No problem. How about Miss Charlotte from Georgia and Katarina? Anything on this one? Any insight on any of this?
Well, I mean, you know, Michael Jackson is just that's a real, real sticky one there because, I mean, first of all, he's dead. So second of all, you know, the artifacts that they got in there, they really shouldn't have nothing out of him. With his charges I can't say charges because he wasn't convicted of any of that, but I feel like if anything has ever come out about a person in that sort of a way, it need to be taken very seriously. Even if they're saying to the fact, oh, it didn't happen, but I'm gonna say something to you: if a child has said something in that aspect, please believe me, something has happened. Somewhere down the line, something, because children are the most honest people that you could really ever know unless they've been groomed to say something. So, I mean, you know, whether or not they, you know, took the artifacts down, it was because they didn't want to support the issues that was going on in the media. So they, you know, I guess they felt like they needed to take that stuff down. So I don't know whether or not they were, his family was getting money or anything out of that. Probably, you know, everything that's out there, even every time they play any music or anything, somebody getting some money.
Yep.
So
right, yeah. there's a royalty paid out. But the article did mention, Charlotte, that these artifacts were bought at an auction by the museum. So I would think if they're bought at an auction, they're museum property, so they probably wouldn't have to pay out any kind of dividend. But you're right, every time a song is played, every time a video is played, there's monies that come back to the actors or the singers or the band members each time, believe it or not. Yeah, I had a roommate that was in that whole world, and every time Rocky Balboa played or The Lovely Bones, both movies he was in, he'd get a check once a month for all the times it played. So I was like, wow, that's a pretty good residual income. I should go become an actor.
Well, uh-huh. You know, the way that works, because in the hospitality industry, like say we have, there's like four of them that I have to pay every single year. If we play any music in the lobby or anything, there's like four of them. I can't remember the name of them now that, you know, we have to pay. You know, one of them is like, you know, $4,000 or $5,000. And I know when I worked in an amusement park, I think they're the rights to play music, and it's all these musicians are in these I don't want to call them clubs, associations. If they pay to get in there. So I know when I was at the Carowinds, the music park, I think it was like $40,000 a year they had to pay, you know, for the music they played. So that's how they get the money. I do know that a lot of the radio stations have stopped playing Michael Jackson songs, but as long as he's still a member, or his estate is still a member of those clubs, he's going to get paid whether they play him or not. So there you go on that.
A union?
What?
It's a union,
kind of like a
right?
union. Yeah, it's kind of like a union. They have to pay the dues, and there's like four of them. If I wasn't so tired, I could probably name them off to you, but I know I have to pay a dad blame check to them every year, all four of them. But, you know, if you want to play any kind of music at your hotel, hospitality, any kind of event, any kind of mall, anything like that, if you play music, you got to pay it. Restaurants, they got to pay it. Period. And the bigger you are, you know, the more you got to pay. And it's like a union that the artists, you know, are members of, and then they get paid whether their music is played. And I know in Pandora, sometimes they'll say, you know, we have to pay for the music license. And there's about four of them. I know, like in Pandora, if you'll skip over a song too much, they'll tell you, you know, that you can't skip over anymore because of the license. But, you know, I guess to give let me just say this, and I'll give back the floor because I want other people to be able to talk too. But getting back to the museum, you know, here, you know, Tammy Shofstall is a young kid. I just put myself, you know, and then I'm a 5-year-old little girl who's walking through a museum, and I've endured sexual abuse, and I've heard the word pedophile and pedophilia, and I'm dealing with this, and I got this heartache going in my life, and I go into this museum and I see the memorabilia of somebody who has been accused of child abuse, sexual child abuse. You know, it could be triggering, you know, or you think, okay, well, you know, this guy's been accused of it and they're displaying his stuff. I just don't think it's good, you know, but that's a can of worms that, you know, should we take the statues down from past wars? I mean, I think that's a question that's bigger, you know, than anybody on this panel, you know, in general to answer.
Uh-huh.
I'm glad they took it down, you know, just because of the issue. And, you know, there's so much overwhelming stuff with Michael Jackson. I mean, there are many, many, many children who have accused him of it. And through the years back, before we brought it to the table like we do now, he paid them off. You know, he paid them off. And then they had hush clauses. You know, the staff, both, you know, his house in London and his house in Neverland, they admitted it. We had one article a couple of weeks back where the one maid had to dig out, you know, underwear, the kid's underwear and his underwear out of the jacuzzi.
Uh-huh.
So it's hard to take a blind eye to that one.
Right. And I was going in a different direction for a second, but yeah, as far as you were talking about taking things down, and you know, I think there's certain sports figures who have their busts in different Hall of Fames that should have their be removed out of them, but unfortunately, they don't, and most likely won't. But anyway, how about Katarina? Anything on this, or maybe Katarina? Did you have a chance to look through the articles, and there's something else that you might like to talk about, or anybody else have anything else on this particular article?
Let's just stick to the topic. It's a good article just from what you guys are talking about. And I just think it's part of the Me Too movement that's happening. And it's also just society's kind of going through a transition of all these, you know, child abuse stories coming up and basically taboo topics that before you know, they weren't showing up on the news, and now it's all out there. And I think what's happening is that we're trying to hold some of that morality in society. So by these museums taking out artifacts that could potentially be linked to a pedophile, I think that's a good step because it's upholding the bar of society in terms of morality. It's saying, no, we're not going to have someone that could potentially have been involved with something like this. You know, it might be a bit extreme, but then again, like, what's a couple of articles out of a children's museum? I'm sure his artifacts are somewhere else where people can go and still see them if they really wanted to. So I just think it's a good step, to be honest.
That's a good point, and I think she hit the nail on the head. It's not appropriate for a children's museum. Maybe it's appropriate in some other museum if people want to go see it, but not in a children's museum. So that answer, that wrapped the whole thing up for me. So thank you for that. Excellent point.
Yeah.
And that was wonderful. Thank you. Let me go open Bobby's mic and see if Bobby wants to get in here. Because we had everybody participate. Hey, Bobby, you here with us?
Yeah, I'm right here. Yeah.
Anybody, have you been in this conversation?
The noise are my new car tires are really, like, roadster tires, so they really vibrate when I'm driving. It goes right through
I wanted to make sure you were included. We heard it from all the
I want to make one. I want to make one comment about Michael Jackson. You know, he was very indicative in the life of Ryan White, and everyone knows that. So he got a big credit by, the guy died, Ryan White died, and Ryan White became the national policy for AIDS, government policy. And Ryan White funds all the state's public AIDS programs, and Michael Jackson helped us. So, you know, going to go down as a big hero in certain areas against sexual stuff.
And I hear what you're saying, and that's in a lot of these cases where these perpetrators of criminal activity on children, you know, they have the Dudley Do-Good stuff they do as well. And sometimes it is a fine line between trying to balance it. But I'm sorry, you do one thing against your child, you can have 1,000 Dudley Do-Good things, and that one thing's enough for me to dismiss you and move you out of the limelight, move you back where you belong, into the Roach Motel, in my opinion.
Well, you know, when
there's
a lot of history of what happened. You know, when this stuff went on, we don't know when he started. He was a young kid. Was a youngster also as a perpetrator as a child? Was he getting abused as a kid? When he started, you know, it's not really not delineated yet when and how and wherefore. When he got big monies and he started to dabble here and there, you know, it's not quite written down yet where. So. Not that he's going to be absolved from it in heaven, but, you know, The doctor.
Absolutely.
Charlie,
Bobby was just,
it
was great.
We got an article. We got an article with this doctor who took over town and raped the children from 30 years. As an MD.
Yeah. Well, this is a wonderful article. We've had all of our panelists interact with it and have say something about it, and I really appreciate that. That's wonderful. It's great to have such awesome participation, even from our newest caller, Katarina, and then Miss Charlotte, who's become a regular on our panels. What a spirit and lively conversation we've had in reference to this article. Does anybody want to say anything on this article as we move on to another one?
Yeah, you know what, Charlie? You just said something to wrap this whole thing up in a nice, neat package. Not only this story, but every other story. It doesn't matter who they are or what they did or what good deed. They do a thing like that, you know, they're done. I think it takes one act like that to cancel out any good that they've ever done. I really do.
That's good. Well, thank you so much. And again, thank you, my wonderful panel, my amazing co-host, Tammy. What a spirited conversation we had on this particular article. And it was wonderful to know that all of our panelists were involved. By the way, folks, if you're listening and you would like to join this panel or any panel on the nights when we're here, please call us. Our guest call-in line is 646-595-2118. Please come join the panel and become part of the conversation. We look forward to hearing from you.
Hey, Charlie, I got another question for you. Quickly, do you think Tammy and Charlotte are laughing at our accents?
I don't know. I can't find that in the news article to go over tonight. So
I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay.
Charlotte doesn't have an accent. What are you talking about? Well, listen, I know I got a southern drawl. So. Charlotte, they're making fun of our southern accents. Hold on, let me finish up. They're making fun of our southern accent. So, you know what? Power to the southerners.
That's right. We can't help about that southern drawl. So, I mean,
that's,
you know,
right.
It's just there.
Yeah, but you know what? Once you experience southern hospitality, you listen, I'm going to tell you what. I've been down in the South for 6 years, and once you experience southern hospitality, it's forget about it. That's what we say up where I'm from in South Philly. But anyway,
I'm wondering what in the world, what makes a person do child molestation to a child? Is it something that might have been hereditary? That something had happened to them for them to do that? Because in my case, and I hadn't told my story yet, and probably one night I guess I will be, but I just sit and I wonder what brought you to that. With all these, you're married, it's women out there that's, you know, willing. I mean, why would you do that to a child?
Well, may I answer? I mean, there's a lot of reasons why people become perpetrators or pedophiles, probably more than we can answer. We do know that 30% of the perpetrators were victims of child abuse themselves. But I also would like to add that there's no excuse for child abuse. It is a dirty family secret sometimes. The cycle can be broken, but it's 30% usually repeat it. you have folks who, you know, sometimes it's not even the act of sex, it's the act of power, you know, over a child. Just it's a power thing. You know, we have some people are just dog mean, and then some people just, you know, some people, and it's no excuse, none of them are excuses, but some people have a sexual attraction for whatever reason to children. So there are many, many, many reasons why people, you know, do what they do, and none of them are right. All of them are selfish, and it just should not happen. So that's my thoughts.
And I'm going to expand on what Tammy. I'm sorry, Charlie, you want to say something?
No, I just told her thank you for a comment.
Oh, yeah. I want to expound on what Tammy said and agree with her. And at the same time, you know, your question you asked, boy, if we could actually find that answer, how much we could probably solve and save children. I mean, the complexity of it and the vastness of it. And in all areas of childhood abuse, not just the sexual abuse portion, in all areas, if we could just figure that out, what would cause you to harm a child in any manner, not just sexually, but in any manner at all, an innocent little child who has little to no ability to protect themselves or to fend for themselves. But if that answer, what an amazing way we could change the world. But one of the ways we do it right now is exposure, is getting information out like we do here at NASCA, keeping it the topic of conversation, keeping it up front, making people accountable. I mean, that's a huge beginning over, I can speak from my childhood, where you never heard of it in a general talking, if you want to call it table talk or over a cup of coffee. So at least the conversation has begun, and it's gotten quite loud. Katarina, our panelist from Canada, it's really a huge movement going on in Canada, and it has been for some time, with Theo Fleury, a Canadian hockey player. You familiar with him up there, Katarina?
You know what? Hockey is huge here, but I have no idea about that case. No.
Okay.
Do you want to fill me in, or...?
Now, Theo Fleury is a very famous Canadian hockey player who played in the NHL and won Stanley Cups, and he exposed the sexual abuse that he went through while up and coming in the children's level of hockey up there. And the person who was coaching him actually went to prison. And Theo Fleury has a march every year up there in Canada, and I've been blessed to go up and actually march with him into Ottawa and into the into your parliament up there. Your parliamentary buildings, and speak in front of Parliament with Theo, and just you might want to look into them. But yeah, it's an amazing thing going on up there, and just a powerful message going on in Canada, and I'm really excited to have dual countries here tonight. We have North America in the house, beautiful. Anybody else on this particular article or not article? A topic that Charlotte brought up. I'm sorry.
You know, I want to actually add something. When, you know, I also ask that question a lot lately, what makes people do horrific things? Because generally, I know a lot of people tend to see the best in a lot of people. So, you know, we'll kind of see their positives and their negatives, and we'll be like, okay, they're human, and we'll dismiss couple of negative traits. But what I realized through time, and this is just meeting certain characters, there are people out there that can feign empathy. They can pretend to be empathic. They learned the social rules in terms of how to behave, and they can pretend to care, to love, just to manipulate and to suck others in. But in reality, you know, maybe they're antisocial or sociopathic or psychopathic, you know, meaning no empathy. They have no empathy, and they'll operate from a self-serving place. So, you know, there's also that argument that literally in the brain, the part where empathy is supposed to be there it gradually either diminishes or completely people are born without it. I mean, there's so many theories. And I think it's important that we do look at the neuroscience of the brain of these people, maybe have them under an MRI, CT scan, start studying it, because it could be a good tool to maybe predict certain behavior, you know? And I'm not saying we should tag people based on their MRI results, but at least it's something we can explore from a biological stance.
And I like that. One of the things I plan on doing, and I wonder if we can get science to do this, I am actually, when I pass away, I'm donating my body to science to utilize in whatever way they need. I don't need it anymore. And I figured, you know, find out what made me tick, and maybe there's something in there, like the background I have, many people will know of it, like how the heck you are, who you are today based off who you went through. I said, I don't know, but maybe some way my brain grew a little different or did something, and maybe if we got some of these, when these horrific people who do these horrible things to children, we got their bodies donated to science, we could look into that kind of thing and find out even more information. But there is no one answer, there is no two answers. It's a multifaceted, vast amount of things, but the only way to get started on anything is to start something, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I've got a perspective on that. While I appreciate that information, I really do. In America, and I know not all countries are free, but you know, within our country, you know, you can't really hold somebody accountable who you haven't proven that they've committed a crime. It's not a crime to be a bad person. It's not a crime to be a narcissistic person. It's not, you know, and I know this is probably controversial, it's not illegal to be attracted to children. It's disgusting, but it's not illegal until they act upon it. So I think we'd be in a dangerous situation if we went and tested everybody and said, well, this person is a potential to, you know, to commit a crime, or this one is a potential to be a pedophile. I think we, you know, that's, It sounds good, but I think we'd be opening up a can of worms. That'd be tough. Mm-hmm. What mm-hmm. we can do is, you know, we can teach our children, you know, to speak up. We can hold, you know, our mandated reporters accountable. We can hold our neighbors accountable for, you know, the people. I mean, we hear these stories all the time. Neighborhood, you've got this one house, and everybody, Carol talks about it, the girl who lived next, you know, across the street from her. You know, the whole neighborhood knew that they beat those kids, and everybody took a blind eye. So, you know, if we've got solid proof that a child is being hurt, you know, we not only need to hold the people accountable that who caused the harm, but the people who turned a blind eye. So I think that, you know, is the stance that I take on that. You know, to understand, and I know Charlie wants to get back to the articles, I know that, but I want to make this comment. You know, getting back to what Charlotte said, you know, and Charlie's right. If we only could pick and choose, you know, you have some folks who may, you know, may have the signs, you know, they're narcissistic, they're this, you know, they have no feelings, you know, they show the signs of being a horrible person. Potentially they could be a pedophile. But how many people do we have, or have we heard or been caught and convicted, that was the nicest guy, the nicest woman that anybody had ever met? They had no idea that they were capable of that. You know, mm-hmm. when there's behind closed doors, we had the principal one time, this was probably about a year or two back, we had an article on there. You know, she was, you know, upstanding, you know, in the community, and she kept her kids in cages because she homeschooled them. So, you know, we never know when the popcorn is going to pop. You know, the kernel might look like it's going to pop, but this little old kernel over here, you know, is the one that actually pops. So that's my thoughts. I'm done.
Well, and Katarina did mention that that it would be even hard to mandate if someone had those traits. But I think being able to find that out and then possibly direct that person, not label, not scarlet letter, I'm going to make them walk around breathing that label, but affording them the opportunity to get some help with the probability they may end up in that direction. I mean, believe it or not, there are people out there, and Tammy made mention to it in her commentary there a moment ago, that are sexually attracted to children that don't act upon it at all. But like, there's some that actually reach out and seek help to find a way to get free from it. So they haven't gone after children. So I would think some of that may be possibly hereditary, possibly mental things going on. But we don't hear much about that. Very few and far between. But there are, and you know, thank goodness there are those like that that are attempting to get the help they need so they don't act upon it and further harm any more children. And the crowd grew silent.
You know, the main goal, this is Tammy again, the main goal is to, you know, protect our children. And we talk a lot about sexual abuse, but there's physical abuse as well and neglect. Emotional abuse and verbal abuse, they're not even legal. They're not even illegal. It's not illegal for a parent to tell their kid that they're dumb and worthless and should have never been born. It's not illegal to tell them that. But it happens, and it's damaging.
And you're right, Tammy, and thank you for bringing that up, because that's one of my big pet peeves is all the other forms of abuse. We get little to no airtime or exposure, and then the ones that do get really, I mean, like you see, you hit on a big one there. And another one is this. A child getting smacked by an adult who a person thinks is the parent will evoke little to any response from anybody witnessing it. But yet if two adults were there in a fisticuffs and were hitting each other, there's assault and battery charges, police are called and everything else. I mean, we've got to really change our standard here and hold people accountable. Assault and battery is assault and battery. And when you're hitting a child, that's assault and battery. And you should be held, to me, a greater offense when you're hitting a child as opposed to hitting an adult. But for the most part, an adult hitting a child goes sight unseen. That child must have deserved it. They must have did something wrong.
But, you know, Charlie, then you call into play this whole issue about children that are physically abused, and I agree it should be a subject that we should talk more about on the show. I still have that article stuck in my head from Massachusetts from last week where they were saying they did an audit of the VS system and said, well, sexual abuse isn't really an injury or isn't really a wound or some nonsense to that effect. But the fact that children are being beat and having broken bones and black eyes and you know, having visible signs of abuse, and they're not even being addressed properly. They're going to school.
And murdered.
Thank you, Charlie. Thank you. Yes, and while those kids, unfortunately, aren't going to school with marks all over them and are just being overlooked, and unfortunately, if the parent is beating the child and saying, you know, if you tell the teacher, I'm going to kill you when you get home, and so the teacher says, what happened to your arm, Johnny? And he says, I fell down the steps, and the teacher says, okay. So, you know, it's like domestic, well, it is domestic violence, but in this situation, it's children. But when you take into account all these child protective services agencies across the country that are just overlooking all the abuse and all the murders and all the broken bones and everything, you're like, what the hell are we doing? You know, what are these people, deaf, dumb, blind, and stupid?
Right. What about two children die in the same home within a year? Two different children die in the same home within a year, and no one is ever held accountable, yet everyone knows who did it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
well,
including the person who did the murder. Including the system that put the children in that home, who put both sets of children in that home, where two children died within a year, and one was critically injured and survived it, but no one, including the perpetrator of the crime, including the system that placed those children in the home, has ever been held accountable. And for those of you who don't know, I'm talking about my story. 52 years after my brother's murder, there has still been no accountability for him or literally 10 months before him. So, yeah, I know this very personally.
And that's why I said it, because here we are 50 years later, and they're still pulling the same crap. So where's the progress? We may be talking about it more, and we damn sure are talking about it more, but is anybody doing anything about it more? And
yes, we are. Yes, I am. I'll be back in Philly in a week and a half.
Good answer.
And it takes folks like us here tonight on this panel. We have had an engaging panel. I want to, Ms. Charlotte, thank you so much for bringing that up. You know that while it wasn't in our news things, that's news that needed to be talked about. And I truly appreciate you bringing that forth. And thank you so very much. Katarina, thank you for your involvement.
It's a pleasure to be here. Pleasure.
Absolutely, Katarina. And Tammy and everybody, Lisa, Bobby, we've had a really interactive show tonight. We still got about 25 more minutes, folks. So, I actually enjoyed going off topic as far as away from, we didn't go off topic, but off of the articles, because I was looking for an article that was kind of mentioning that tonight as I was browsing through them before the show, something that was, you know, not pointing in sexual abuse away, and not that sexual abuse should be ignored or silenced, but so much of the untalked about abuses that we just brought up in a very lively conversation need to be brought forth so that those children out there who are going through that, who think no one cares about me, all I hear about, I'm not being sexually abused, so I guess what happened to me doesn't matter. You know, I remember being that kid. I mean, we weren't talking about sexual abuse when I was a kid, but I remember being a kid and going through what I went through and thinking, man, if I was a kid nowadays, going through what I was going through while I was locked in that basement, while I was, all the things I dealt with, and nobody ever talks about that, or you don't hear much about it. It's all about the sexual abuse. I probably would have wished, or maybe if I get sexual abuse, maybe somebody will pay attention to what's going on to me. You know, so I really appreciate, Charlotte, you bringing that up tonight. Thank you.
But you know, Charlie, you should host more often, because this is a subject that, you know, I know if you were hosting, this subject is going to come up more often, and it should. And, you know, unfortunately, of course, you know, on NASCA we talk so much about the sexual abuse aspect, and there is so much more, the emotional abuse, the neglect, you know, on and on and on. So I couldn't agree with you more, and, you know, if you host more, we'll talk about it more. That's for damn sure, and it would be a good thing.
Yeah.
I just want to say something real quick. It's not just NASCA that is that sexual abuse is being pretty much the hot button topic all across all areas of conversation in the news and everyday life and in the newspaper. And it's wonderful that we at NASCA here are doing it. So I don't. It is the subject matter we just spoke about needs to be brought out in all areas and broadcasted across. So I love what our NASCA family does and what NASCA does. I just wanted to say that. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Tammy. Were you going to say something?
Yeah, two things. Well, Lisa, being I put out the schedule, I'll make sure and put him on there a little bit more.
You better check with me first. You might want to check on me first, because I'm involved. I'm doing a lot of stuff in the evenings that is feet in the street, get stuff done, and actually be at children's talent and helping them. So check with me. I have no problem with it.
I was just teasing. I was just trying to get that little plug in there.
Absolutely. I'm going to put this out there for our NASCA leadership that may be listening to this show now in the future. If you want someone else to help with articles, I have no problem assisting with sending articles in. I get, unfortunately, hundreds a day from around the world with the multiple organizations and things I belong to on a multitude of topics that cover the gamut of childhood abuses. So I'd be more than happy to contribute towards these articles each week.
Well, good, because we talked about that a time before. I believe Terry Lanahan is putting the articles together, and her email is on the schedule, so I would encourage you to start sending those over to her. That would be awesome. The other thing that I wanted to mention was, you know, Charlie read our mission statement at the very beginning of, of the show as we usually do at the beginning of the show. And I'd just like to say, here at NASCA, we have a single purpose: to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. So we do support survivors of all abuses, even the two that are not illegal, which is emotional traumas and verbal abuse. So, you know, that was loud. I don't know what that was. What was I going to say? You know, someone like me who has endured all of them, but neglect, you know, I know what it's like to be beaten and battered. I know what it's like to be physically abused. I know what it's like to be called, you know, dumb and stupid and worthless. And they are part of, you know, the abuse that children endure. And we do need to talk about all of the types of child abuse, as we do on this show. But they all get our support from NASCA, and we need to come up with more articles as well. I agree.
Right, I believe that we all agree with the support, but I think the point that Lisa was making, I think, was that we need to have more topics of conversation in those areas that go beyond just supporting and actually talking out about them, like we've done tonight and like you've done, Tammy. So I look over bringing us back to our purpose of being here. And this is what a great show we're having tonight. Folks, we got a little less than 20 minutes. Any other topic, any article, something wants to talk about? I mean, I actually like the open topics idea. It is article night, so if someone has an article burning on they want to bring out, please, let's do that. If not, we can go to another topic.
Well, that brings up a good point that I'd like to bring, because tomorrow night is an open mic and it is an open topic, which we always have on Tuesday nights. We also have the benefit of having Dr. Deb with us, who is a forensic psychologist. So those who would like to participate in an open topic, open discussion, I would strongly encourage you to chime in tomorrow night to the show. And like I said, we've got a psychologist that can help answer some of those questions as well. So that's a little plug for tomorrow night.
Perfect. Yeah, I believe we all need to do that more on each of these shows is promote the other shows that NASCA has, the other five nights a week outside the ones that we're on. So NASCA is on the air, folks, six nights a week. The only day that we're not on the air is Sunday, right, or is it Saturday? Which day is it? Damn, I forgot. My brain just went south.
Saturday.
Okay, the only day we're not out here on the air is Saturday. Other than that, we're out here six nights a week. And we're out here Eastern time. It will be 6 p.m. or I'm sorry, 8 p.m. to 9:30, and Pacific time 5 to 6:30. And if you want to, please call in, be a guest call in, be a part of our panel. 646-595-2118 is our guest calling number, our panelist number, and join the conversation, or just go ahead and listen. But be part of us by being proactive, being interactive, involved. You're being part of the solution, not part of the problem. We truly appreciate you. How about it, panelists? Any other articles jumping out with anybody?
Well, there was one article. Let me get back to it. It was a little bit different, and it asked the question. Let me see if I can find it again. Hold on. Okay, here it is. It's out of New Zealand, and it's an opinion piece. And it asked, to me, it's not back in its opinion. At first, I thought it was a question, but I see it's not. Opinion: not vaccinating your kids is a form of child abuse. So we've got this guy here. It's a little bit of a lengthy article that brings up the debate on whether or not vaccinating your child and protecting them from some of these community diseases, is it child abuse or not? I mean, there's several of them that, you know, fights, you know, prevents polio and, you know, the measles. One of the things I got in a discussion with a friend the other day, especially with all the, you know, illegal undocumented folks moving into America. We've got a lot of the folks who are coming over here who have not been vaccinated, and we're starting to get a measles outbreak. Measles was almost completely stomped out, and now we're having to, you know, we're at the verge of a measles, you know, outbreak again. So the question is, you know, is not vaccinating your child a form of child abuse? What do you guys think?
Wow, that's a big one. You can't talk about that in 15 minutes. Oh, my God.
Well, I believe we can talk about anything in 15 minutes, so let's see. My opinion is this, that it depends on the vaccination. I mean, if in my world of parenting, you know, if it was a new test vaccination, I'm not so sure I'm comfortable until I know that it's safe. And of course, I said, well, let somebody else tell me the guinea pig, not mine, which I wouldn't want that either. But they would have to show me scientifically that they're able to, that it has some proof. But like the article mentions, I mean, and Tammy, you mentioned about measles. In our area of the country right now, we've had several cases of mumps come up. And I haven't heard about that since, geez, back when I was a little kid. And then, so, yeah, some of these things are creeping their way back in. But I don't know, the article talks about, is it child abuse not to vaccinate? Is it child abuse if your child has a headache and you don't give them a children's aspirin for the headache? I mean, that's a tough one.
I didn't see that coming.
That is a tough one.
Well, yeah, there's so many questions, I think, and it's also, it's not just, okay, are they going to get vaccinated? For one thing, it's how many doses and in what time frame? Because I think if we overload a little child's body with tons of vaccinations, hoping it will save them in the future, when it's happening, it might be, like, it might actually flare up the immune system and cause something, you know. So I think vaccinations are kind of important. They are. Certain ones should be mandated, you know, possibly, but I think that parents should have a choice for most of them, because some of them might not be necessary and it might cause more harm. Who knows, right?
Absolutely, and sadly,
go ahead.
Not saying I hear what you're saying, Katarina. And sadly, some children have lost their lives to getting a vaccination, and some adults have. So I think the article again goes back to labeling not vaccinating your child as you're now a child abuser. That's a tough one. I mean, my daughter did get her vaccinations. Just because that's what we felt, and I was, you know, but I don't know if I would, I mean, I guess if I knew the vaccination was right, it was good and worked and had a proven history and someone refused to do it, I don't know if I would call them an abuser. I would say you're not giving your child, you're not protecting your child. Maybe you are not protecting them, but I don't know. I'm definitely going to be chewing on that one for a little bit.
Yeah. Problem, this doesn't go directly to the question, but I think a lot of parents are being railroaded into these things by, you know, big pharma who puts this crap on the market, and then they, you know, they get involved with the government, and the government and the FDA market this crap because they're going to make billions of dollars, and they don't care what kind of damage it causes or autism or any kind of whatever. They don't care because people are being forced into it. And, you know, and there's a lot of money being made. And I think that's got to be part of the discussion. To what degree, I don't know.
Yeah, and I think someone mentioned earlier, I think it was Charlie, maybe it was, I'm not sure who it was, that, you know, if it's been something like, you know, it's been around for years, you know, the diphtheria and the mumps and, you know, the measles and all that, you know, I don't have a problem with that. But these newfangled ones, I think they're suspect. So that's a really tough one, because you know, where does the parent draw the line on protecting the child, whether it's a vaccine or, you know, getting medical help? I mean, we've done stories on this show with articles on parents who have withheld medical treatment for their children, and their children died. And we had that horrific story about 6 months back about the guy who had his family fasting for religious purposes, and they all starved to death. So, you know, where do you draw the line on the child's safety, whether it's a vaccine versus, you know, their own thoughts? Where I personally draw the line is, you know, it's got to be tested and proven. You know, if it's, you know, these older ones, you know, I don't have quite the heartburn over it, but these new ones that are just, you know, just come out of nowhere, I won't take a flu shot. I mean, that's I'm on the fence on that one. I will not take a flu shot, and I hadn't had
me
the flu.
Neither.
I think I've had the flu
neither.
Once in 5 years. So
I agree.
Sadly, some of the things that are going on up in Canada that I'm very familiar with, because I went up there to study the effects of the UNCRC, which is the United Nations Convention on the Rights of the Child. Canada had ratified that many years ago. Is Canadian government has infiltrated into families that, Katerina, you can give us a better perspective on this if you know about it. But my experience in coming up into Canada is that Canadian government, when families have decided that they don't want their child to have a specific vaccination for one reason or another, the Canadian government, under the guise of the UNCRC, has forced that family to give that child a vaccination, because that's some of what, some of the area of the UNCRC I'm concerned about, but the overall effect of it, as my experience and my studies up in Canada and several other countries about it, is it actually is a good thing for the children. Sadly, America hasn't given it. But how about you, Katerina? You are from up in Canada. Have you heard stories like that where the government has intervened and forced families to do that because it can with those legalizations?
Well, you know, I personally haven't, but I wouldn't be surprised, to be honest. I can tell you my experience growing up in the Canadian system. Vaccinations like, you know, your flu shots, they would be incorporated into class time. Like all the kids would be gathered and we would all go get vaccinated in the school. So things were kind of set up where it was incorporated into our routine. And I don't even know if parents were aware that much, to be honest. So I do know that people do have a choice whether to vaccinate or not, but I would not be surprised if the government just steps in because their priority is the child's health, you know, and children go to school or kindergarten every day. And if it's a risk to the public, it's kind of a risk assessment that the government does. So I really wouldn't be surprised.
Well, we got about 6 minutes left, pal. So, anybody else want to talk about this subject?
Yeah, I wanted to see what Charlotte thought over there in the Savannah area. Charlotte, what are your thoughts on this? You still with us?
Well, yeah, I'm with you. Well, you know, my biggest thing is I know that, you know, everybody, when they have children, they have to make that decision whether or not they want their child to be vaccinated or not. To me, I feel like some of it need to be mandatory because, you know, children, with us just living day to day in the environment, it's kind of hard to fight off stuff. And with those little people, you just don't know, you know, what they're going to encounter, even at school, even, you know, because they have washed their hands anyway, if you don't watch out for them. But, yeah, I like some of those vaccines, I think they probably should make sure that they're done because it's just to save their lives, really, you know. And a lot of times we don't understand about the vaccine. That's like the flu vaccine. It's really just the flu that they're giving you, and you got to take Tylenol 4 days to get rid of that.
Yep.
You know, so if you don't take something after you do the vaccine, then you sick.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you know, and a lot of people just don't know that and realize that, you know, that that's just the fight off the fight off.
Right.
So, anyway.
Yeah, that's kind of my thoughts, too. Some of the older ones has been proven, you know, I don't have heartburn with, but the flu shot and some of the other ones I have serious heartburn over. So, like
yeah.
I said, that's a tough one.
Well, you know, in answer to the original question, is it abuse for parents to refuse to vaccinate their children? I'm going to say no, I don't think it's abuse. I will say for any parent that refuses the vaccines, I think they're coming from, you know, a better safe than sorry point of view, or even a religious point of view, or an intelligent, like, investigative point of view, where they made a calculated decision against it. So I don't really think,
yeah,
I don't think it's abuse. I think some people could call it, maybe some detractors could call it some kind of neglect, but I definitely don't think it's abuse, because if a parent is making an informed decision, then it's the parent's right to do that. What the government does at that point is a whole nother thing. I know there was a story coming out of New York lately where a little boy had cancer, and when he went into remission, his mother took him home, and the Hospital of Child Services actually filed a lawsuit against the mother to force her to continue to give chemotherapy to the boy who was already in remission. And, I mean, I just couldn't believe that.
Right.
I guess that could be something about like a blood transfusion. If you got a child who's needing a blood transfusion to save his life, and the parents refuse, I mean, what do you do with that?
Well, if it's religious, they got a problem, because I think the parents, I don't think.
Well,
it's
that's a lot of.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that, some people could consider that as a abuse. You know, even that'd be the same thing with the vaccine. If the child might be, life might be, you know, threatened, and the vaccine is gonna help, what do you do?
Right, and I will. I would like to mention this, that because Lisa said that it may be a form of neglect. Neglect is abuse, and you know, neglect is, you know, illegal. So, you know, but then again, is that, you know, is that really neglect? You know, if it that's a tough one. That's a tough one.
Yeah, because
now, folks,
what if you're...
I want to say,
go ahead.
We are down to a minute. We are down to a minute and a half, and I don't want to run, you know, so I don't want to shorten us, but at the same time, I want to be cognizant that we have a minute and a half left. We have five panelists and myself. So we've had a very spirited conversation on many topics and many articles tonight. So I would like to give an opportunity to each person to give a closing remark in tonight's show on whatever topic, the current article we're talking about or any other ones. And this time I'm going to do it a little different. I'm going to start at the bottom of the list, by no means being the bottom, being any less than the top, but we're going to start off with Katarina. Katarina from Canada.
What am I supposed to do?
I'm just doing a quick close up on the show. We have about a minute left, so I got to give everybody just a few seconds.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, it's been such a pleasure being part of the show. Everyone had some wonderful thoughts, and these are very important issues that we need to keep bringing up. So, yeah, I hope to join again.
Thank you, Katarina. It was great having you. Bobby from Florida, real quick. Bobby, we've got a few seconds left. I want to get everybody in here as quick as we can. How about Charlotte? Miss Charlotte from Georgia.
Well, I just want to say good night. I'm 3 hours ahead of you, I guess, or something like that, California or wherever you're at. But enjoyed it.
Thank you, Miss Charlotte. We enjoy you. Lisa, how about you real quick, and then we got Tammy, and then we're going to wrap the show up.
Good night, Gracie.
All right, Tammy, my wonderful co-host.
Thank you for everybody who participated. Thank you, Charlotte. Thank you, Katarina, Lisa, Charlie.
Good night.
Good show. Good night.
Good night.
Good night. Good night.
And this is Charlie Stecker, and it's Charlie coming along. We're saying thank you so much to my awesome panel. thank you to our listeners, and thank you for being part of the NASCA family. Be blessed, one and all. Good night, and take care until tomorrow.
I'll know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn was blue.
Talk Radio.